south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, just one announcement. Last call for my July 2014 Expat Wisdom Seminar, taking place in Central America, in and about Guatemala. And it starts this Saturday night, the 12th, so all you expat gonna-bees and wannabes sitting on the fence up there in Cleveland and Boston and parts north, you still have time to sign on. Just go to www.expatwisdom.com, look for the seminar link at the top of the page, and dive on in. There's still time. Enough said about that. Now, a few weeks ago, I did a couple of shows on crime, violence, and safety in Latin America. And I gave a lot of very good pointers and tips regarding gringos and expats living down here. Now, let me just point this out. Regarding crimes and violence against gringos, the fact is, like I've said a few times before, I've been robbed twice, as a matter of fact. And the last time I was robbed, get this, 18 years ago. Now, that's not to say that my cleaning lady hasn't lifted a few things over the years. Some shampoo, a few cents worth of detergent, fruit and vegetables and stuff, but that'll happen with everyone who's got a cleaning lady here. The fact is, I only hear of robbery cases involving gringos when they're in the wrong place at the wrong time or when they get lax and let their guard down. Now, as far as expats that I've known a long time and who I actually hear from now and again, the fact is, on very short notice, I could easily round up 20 or so who've never had a bit of trouble. Again, except for maybe the cleaning lady stealing some spare change or a can of tuna from the pantry. Believe me, every gringo has a cleaning lady story like that. And by the way, here's something you probably haven't heard. In talking now and again to long-term expats and hearing their cleaning lady stories like that, all of us have pretty much come to the conclusion that cleaning ladies aren't necessarily born petty thieves or born with sticky fingers, but it's a learned habit. Because as it turns out, if you hire a cleaning lady and it's her first job working for you, a gringo, that is, it's her very first job as a maid. Normally, she'll be very honest and you won't have any trouble. It's just when you inherit or hire a cleaning lady that's used to working with Latin families, Latin bosses, that's when they pick up those bad habits. Because you see, it relates to the fact that Latins who have cleaning ladies treat their help quite shabbily. And of course, these ladies working around the house feel that. They know they're looked down on as second-class citizens. And naturally harbor some resentment. And one way to get over on a classist boss like that is to take the opportunity now and again to palm a few things, which you could look at as a small bit of sweet revenge. So, as you can imagine, if you've got a cleaning lady who's got that attitude already, she's going to carry those bad habits with her when she works for you, too. However, like I said, if you're her first boss, things generally work out fine and she becomes part of the family. But the question is, how to break a good cleaning lady of that sticky fingers habit when it's already built into her mentality? But I digress, as usual. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Talking about gringos and crime. And the long succession of expats that I know that have never had problems with robberies or assaults. Now, you tell me, could it be an extraordinary concentration of dumb luck? Or is it that we all just stay out of those bad zones and let those ghetto bad boys prey on themselves and their own neighbors? So then, what about gringos living in Latin cities where most of the crime occurs? As for gringos living and doing business in Latin cities, we absolutely want to live and do business in the safe zones. The zones and neighborhoods that people know are safe day and night. And you know, contrary to what first world news media projects, even in the biggest of Latin cities, there are always safe and nice areas, and those places are pretty obvious. All you have to do is drive through, and you can see that the lawns are nicely manicured, there's no garbage on the streets, the cars are nicer. There are just a lot of places in every Latin city that look like subdivisions and neighborhoods in Middle America. And note this, as a general rule, where there are a lot of pedestrians, a lot of street hawkers, and a lot of chicken buses, those are places you do not want to live or do business. Why? Because that's where poor folks congregate, and you know poor folks have poor habits. Those are the folks that are just barely scratching by, living from day to day, and they're packed into those poor neighborhoods like sardines. And if you think the gangs and the bad boys and the extortionists live in nice upper middle class and wealthy areas, then you're living on a different planet than I am. As a general observation, you just want to keep a low profile. And it's true, you're a gringo, so you're probably going to stick out anywhere you go. But just remember, there's a lot of scruffy-looking backpackers in Latin America, too, that are sleeping in $5-a-night hotels and look like they don't have two nickels to rub together. And these first-world guys and gals can be found in the worst sections of the biggest cities in Latin America. That's where so many of these cheap flea-bag hotels are found. And surprisingly enough, you'll find they have very few problems. Why? Because they don't have $500 sunglasses, carry $1,000 smartphones, wear bling bling, and rent new SUVs. So as a result, they're just a tiny little blip on the radar and people leave them alone. Meaning, sure, you're going to be taller and probably a lot lighter skin color than the average Latin person, but like I've said 1,000 times, being a victim, whether it's a robbery or whatever, is not only about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's partly due to that, of course. But most of all, it's about appearing to be the guy or gal with the most amount of bling or money in a given situation. So as far as number one, being in the wrong place, well, it's your own damn fault if you are in the wrong place, because you should know better. When you're in a big Latin city especially, before you even get your boots on the ground and start exploring, you should have a nice little city map marked out with the good and bad zones and know which ones to keep out of. And number two, about being in one of those places at the wrong time, well, if you, being a gringo, are in the habit of closing down the bars at 2 a.m. in the disco district, those nighttime partying sections of town draw all kinds of people late into the night, and if you're a regular in a place like that, even if it's in a decent neighborhood, there's a chance that some bad guys will pick up on your unchangeable stupid patterns. In fact, as bad boys know all over the world, the easiest folks to assault and rob are the ones who are creatures of habit. So it's easy enough to change your habits, or not, right? The fact is, new arrival gringos and expats can and do get into a rut sometimes. If you're one of those gringos who comes down to Latin America and ends up hanging around at one of those expat bars. Because you see, what happens all too often with new arrival, clueless expat gringos? And I ought to know, I was once one too. Anyway, you become a regular at one of those expat bars, and it's an easy thing to do. Soon enough, you will be one of those guys and gals closing down the bars at 2 a.m, and truthfully, I've seen that happen to way too many gringos. And you know, if you're a regular listener to this program, then I do not recommend anyone hang at the gringo expat bars, but that seems to be a phase almost all gringo males, anyway, end up going through. Because you know, when gringo males come down here as expats to live, most often they come down single without knowing too many people at all, so they easily fall into that gringo expat bar scene, mostly just because their Spanish sucks and they crave the camaraderie of other gringo expats who are in the same boat, or so they think. Another thing about keeping a low profile. Now, I don't mean you have to dress totally neutral and slink around and hide in the shadows, nor do I mean you have to hole yourself up in your house or your office. All I mean, and you know this, is to dress comfortably and casually with no bling or designer sunglasses and, of course, no new late model SUV. Buying and driving around one of those things is the worst thing you can do. First of all, you're a target for the bad boys. Second of all, you gotta carry heavy insurance on it. They're often stolen, even in so-called secure parking lots. Not to mention, they're actually too big for the average Latin parking place, so they get dinged to hell in no time from other people opening and closing their doors. Then there's the fact that cops at roadblocks love to stop people in SUVs because they know the driver has money, so they're an easy touch for a bribe. And on and on. Yet, as you'll find out when you get down here, a late model SUV is exactly what every single Latin person aspires to. Because like I've said so many times before, for Latins, it's all about the show. It has nothing to do with economy, convenience, or reality. It's a macho society, so it's all about impressing your friends and your relatives and, well, everyone, if you can. I mean, to any Latin person, a guy or a gal driving one of those big SUVs has really somehow hit the jackpot. And of course, that's in the mind of every bad boy extortionist and gang member down here too. So if you do have the inclination to show off like that, be prepared for some trouble because eventually you're going to get it. It's like expat Eddie says. Down here, having a late model high-end SUV is like driving a motorcycle. It's not a question of are you going to get into an accident if you drive a motorcycle. It's just a question of when and how bad it's going to be. Ask any motorcyclist. And by the way, expat Eddie's speaking from experience because he recently threw caution to the wind himself and bought his girlfriend a brand new SUV. Not that he wanted to, but Eddie's a soft touch and he ran out of excuses. And like Eddie says, she's beautiful, sexy, and a really good whiner. And she kept pestering him about it a little at a time, like the Chinese water torture. And that's another story I might tell later, so stay tuned. Now, about that low-profile thing. One of my very good expat gringo friends, who's been down here at least 15 years now, he's another guy that came down with virtually nothing, maybe 10 grand to his name, and now he's worth millions. Starting out first in the gold mining business in Costa Rica, and continuing on in the mining business in Colombia, where he's been for the last 10 years or so. And by the way, I bet you didn't know they had gold mining in Costa Rica, did you? Well, you know what? About 14 or 15 years ago, he took me to a river on the Costa Rican side of the border with Panama, where we met some local Costa Rican guys who were panning for gold the old-fashioned way in a river. And when I asked one of these guys how they were doing, he dug in his pocket and pulled out a handful of gold nuggets. And I'll tell you what, it made me want to get down on my hands and knees and give it a try. Anyway, like I said, my buddy settled in Colombia. And some years ago, he ended up marrying a beautiful Latin girl from the middle class. In fact, she was his secretary. Now, because we were in different countries for the last 5 years, I haven't really seen him too much at all. Not in the past few years, anyway, but I happened to run into him a couple months ago, and you know what he said to me? He said, "Johnny, I made a big mistake. I love my wife and all," he said, "but my problem was when she asked me for something, I just said, go ahead and buy it." And then he admitted that included the jewelry and the designer stuff and all the electronic toys and the trips to Miami, culminating, of course, in a couple of luxury SUVs in the family. And, of course, that goes with the bodyguards and the drivers, too. And, of course, his kids go to the best schools. And at those schools, his kids were thrown in with other Latin rich kids, with bodyguards and SUVs, even helicopters, etc., etc. And now, the last time I ran into my old buddy, he said, "Johnny, you know what? I really don't like my life much. What I really want now is my old life back, and guess what? I can't have it. Because if I've learned one hard-ass lesson living down here in Latin America, is that once you've lost your anonymity, once you've got a high profile, you just can't turn the clock back. You can't all of a sudden wake up one day and say, I guess it's time to have a low profile again. I think I'll take out my old college backpacking clothes and take a hike through the woods." Well, like he said, that will never happen. Because once your neighbors and friends and acquaintances and the people at your kids' school have pegged you as a guy with money and position, you're stuck forever with that label. Basically, you're permanently tagged in the high levels of the Latin American class system. And of course, you've also been tagged by the bodyguards, the maids, the mechanics, the gardeners, and everybody you come in contact with that helps you run your massive household, because that's what happens. So, my friend was complaining about a lot of things, how his life's become more complicated and how way too many people knew his personal business. The fact is, he came a long, long way in 15 years, but he sure wasn't enjoying it much anymore. He was no longer just one of those handsome gringo expats in Latin America. And between you and me, he's really only a 5, but the gringo advantage pushes him up to around an 8. So anyway, there's a lesson in all this. If a gringo comes down here with any kind of money at all, once he starts flashing it and throwing it around a bit, there goes that low profile that we all started out with when we first came down here. Then he said, "You know what, Johnny? Unfortunately, the only way to get my low profile back, my old life, is to move to another Latin country. You know, build or buy a nice house, but not a 5 or 6,000 square foot monstrosity on 5 acres that needs 2 full-time gardeners like I've got now. And then he said, you know what, Johnny? I have a big, beautiful beach house that I spend 2 weeks a year at. And I pay a maid, a gardener, and a maintenance man to live in it. Just to get this, keep it in shape for my wife's relatives who unfortunately have the key to the place because in a moment of good-hearted gringo weakness, I once mentioned they could use it any time. Boy, was that a mistake. Anyway, here I am talking to my old, formerly happy, funny, easy-going gringo buddy whining to me about how he's in a rut that he can't get out of. He said he really is perfectly willing to pick up stakes and move to another Latin country and get his anonymity back. But when he broached the subject to his wife, she threw a fit. Because after all, like he said, half the people maintaining his households, the maids, the gardeners, the drivers, the guards, etc., and I think he's got at least a dozen of them, are his wife's shoestring relatives. Now, admittedly, a lot of you expat wannabes and gonna-bes up in Boston, Milwaukee, and Cleveland would love to be in this guy's position. I mean, really, this guy's got the life of a Hollywood mogul. But like he said, he'd give it all up, or almost all anyway, to get his old anonymous life back. So for all you guys and gals up there in the first world, if you have ideas of coming down here and making a big splash, sure, go ahead and be a success. But remember, it's important to keep that low profile because once you lose it, you can't get it back. Now, in recent past shows, I covered the security issue for people living in the bigger cities in Latin America. Now, for those of you expat wannabes and gonna-bes who prefer to live the simple life in a smaller town or out in the boonies, a lot of you have emailed me mentioning you'd like to have a plot of land or a homestead or whatever. So anyway, in regards to safety, security, crime, etc., when you're living outside of the big cities, here's a few good tips. Number one, always have your property fenced in somehow. And not so much because criminals are going to invade and hassle your family and all that, but because down here in Latin America, cows and livestock roam pretty much freely. And if they're used to roaming on your property, you're going to have a hell of a time getting them off. And secondly, if you have a big piece of land and you don't have the perimeter fenced in, you could have trouble with squatters. Because you see, in Latin America, there are a lot of very poor folks that'll see a piece of land that hasn't been attended to in a long, long time, seemingly abandoned. And suddenly, in a week's time, a tin shack will go up and some laundry hanging out to dry on a tree in the back. And sure, if that happens, you could go down to the municipality and complain. But this is Latin America, you know, and anything that goes through court moves like a wounded snail. Which is why personal lawsuits are rare down here, and almost everyone who's got a gripe settles out of court. And by the way, if you do end up buying some farm property out in the county, and it's a big enough property that there may be a squatter or two on it already, it's the responsibility of the seller to have those people removed. So don't sign the papers before that happens. And by the way, if you're down here long enough, you'll realize there are three ways to get rid of squatters. One, you could go through the courts, and eventually, 6 months to a year later, the local authorities will come out with the paperwork and give the interlopers a time period like a month to get off. And generally after a month goes by, nothing will happen. They'll still be there. Then you'll go down to the municipality again, and this time you'll be pissed off, and you might even hand a 20 or a 50 to the guy in charge down there. Then tell him, here, this is for gas. Then they'll get off their dead asses and do something. Because generally, the reason why they don't get out there in the first place is because they don't have enough gas in the tank to get there. Anyway, after you've gone through that business three or four times, and finally you get the squatters off your property, then you've got people pissed off at you. Because squatters almost always have friends and family nearby. And naturally, they'll resent the fact that they've been dislocated again. And believe me, out in the boonies and in small towns like that, you want to make friends, not enemies. So, in the end, doing it the legal way is not always your best choice. Now, another way to get squatters off your land is to talk to your lawyer about it. He'll usually have some great suggestions, then make a few phone calls, but it might cost you a hundred or two. Now, what that might involve is some unofficial enforcers, if you know what I mean. Now, I'm not suggesting you do that, but sometimes that's the way it's done here. However, in situations like that, I've been told you don't want to know any more about it. In other words, ask me no questions and I'll tell you no lies. Now, of course, that method could end up ruffling a lot of feathers too. You're not going to make any friends that way. But as one Latin lawyer told me, it does put the fear of the Lord into any other squatters that might have the same idea of relocating there. However, the best method all around for getting rid of squatters, a solution that makes everyone happy, is just to pay them off. Now remember, the reason why they're squatting is because they got absolutely nothing. They're cooking with wood, they're getting water from a stream because they don't have a well, and they certainly don't have electricity. Unless they're stealing it from a power pole nearby. And believe me, out in the county, that goes on all the time down here. In fact, a few times I've seen it myself. A young adolescent kid shimmying up a pole to hook into the power. That's what expat Eddie calls balls of steel and brains of mush. But I just call it Darwinism. In fact, at my expat wisdom seminar, I show a photo of a young guy doing just that. But anyway, the best way to resolve a squatter problem is to pay them off. And then you might ask, what would it cost you? Well, let me put it this way. Since they're there illegally in the first place and really haven't got a leg to stand on, according to a couple of lawyers I've spoken with, a very nice offer for them would be the cash payment of a year's salary for an average Latin guy. For example, in Central America, excluding Panama and Costa Rica because they've been so gringoized that their average salaries are double, you're looking at a payout of about $3,500 to $4,000. But believe me, like one liar told me, wait a minute, did I say liar? I meant lawyer. Or did I? Talk about a Freudian slip. Anyway, he said you don't start there at $3,500 to $4,000. You start at half that. And normally, they take it. Because you see, out in the boonies, poor folks don't even make near that. In fact, the average wage for a female agricultural worker in Latin America, excluding, again, Costa Rica and Panama, is only about $3 a day, or about $1,000 a year. Which is why so many young females and adolescent boys hoof it to the big city. Because there they figure they'll be making at least minimum wage, which is about 3 to 4 times what they're earning in their agricultural job out in the boonies. Now, you might ask, why is it only $3 a day when minimum wage in these countries is at least $10 or $12 a day? Well, that's because the legal minimum wage is only enforced for people working on the books. Meaning, folks who are working for a company paid by check and who are on the tax rolls. Whereas, at least 90% of agricultural jobs in Latin America are off the books. It's like seasonal migrant work in the U.S. Most of that is so temporary, it's cash and off the books, too. It's always been that way. So anyway, if you're going to live out in the boonies and you want to stay friends with the poor people living in the area and keep it that way, if you do have squatters, make them an offer and buy them out. Now get this, one lawyer told me he had a gringo client who bought a big farm in Honduras and he had two sets of squatters to get rid of, two families. And he ended up offering them a payout of $3,000 a family and they took it. So the question is, after they picked up all their stuff, where did they go? One guess, where do you think they went? Illegally through Mexico and finally onto the promised land, the bad old U.S. of A., Texas to be precise. And now all you guys and gals up there in the States are supporting them with your safety net. That is, if they made it. Wow, how did I get from fencing your property in Latin America to illegal aliens in Texas? So anyway, the point is, if you're out in the boonies, you have to put a fence around your property. Now, if you have a big spread, I'm not saying you have to have an expensive cyclone fence or a brick wall, but your boundaries have to be delineated and large animal proof. And by the way, here's another tip. A lot of rural folks and farmers put up a skimpy barbed wire fence or one of those rustic wooden plank fences and they transplant a baby bougainvillea about every 10 feet. And then in about 2 or 3 years, after that bougainvillea takes off and engulfs the fence, you got yourself one hell of a terrific barrier because if you know anything about bougainvilleas, not only are they bushy and dense and have tremendously beautiful flowers, they also have the biggest, most penetrating thorns you've ever seen. Think rose bushes on steroids with thorns 3 times as big and 5 times as nasty. So believe me, a nice long stretch of bougainvillea as an adjunct to a flimsy wood or wire fence will definitely keep away man and beast. Oh, and here's another very important thing if you live out in the boonies or you have a farm or just a nice little homestead out in the middle of nowhere. Your number one deterrent's gonna be a dog and not just a yipey chihuahua or schnauzer. You should have something more substantial than that, preferably two good-sized dogs, but one is actually fine. Now, if you have a nice orderly house and you don't want big dogs messing up things, you can do what a lot of smart gringos and expats do. Let the dogs have free run of your place outside, within that fenced-in area. And then at night or when the weather's bad, like in the rainy season, they have their own little protected space in the garage or in your laundry room or in the breezeway or back hallway. Though, of course, some gringos and expats let their dogs romp everywhere. That's okay, too, except if you're the visitor. Oh, and by the way, as a strict rule, Latins are afraid of big dogs. In fact, I know gringos with dogs who've had the same cleaning lady for years and years. Yet that cleaning lady will not enter the house at all unless those dogs are in their cages. That's even though the dogs are absolutely used to having her around and wouldn't do her any harm at all. Seems like being afraid of dogs is a very Latin thing. And I don't mean giant dogs either. Any dog over 50 pounds will do the trick. And I've come to the conclusion that it's because there's a lot of stray, hungry dogs in Latin America. These are stray dogs roaming the streets, sifting through garbage, mostly in the bad sections of big Latin cities. And when you approach these guys, they start growling and get pretty irritable. And that's why the average Latin is perpetually cautious and afraid of every dog they run into. And think about this for a second. If you're down here long enough and keep your eyes open, you'll notice Latins will never walk up to a stray or a dog they don't know and start petting it. Unless, of course, it's a tail-wagging, lightweight, happy 5-pound ball of fur. But if a Latin person comes across an unknown dog bigger than that, they'll always keep their distance. However, when you're up in the States, you'll notice a lot of people will walk right up to a dog they see on the sidewalk and start petting it and hugging it like they're the best of friends. Down here, you'll never see a Latin person do that to a strange dog. And by the way, because of that Latin fear of dogs, one of the best ways for a young gringa lady down here to go pretty much anywhere she pleases is with her dog on a leash. And again, I don't mean a chihuahua or a terrier. I mean a nice, substantial dog of 50 pounds or more. The fact is, over the years, I have known some gringo ladies who travel everywhere with their dogs. The dog's in the car everywhere they drive around, and believe it or not, businesses are quite liberal down here when it comes to pets. Dogs are pretty much allowed anywhere, even in restaurants. And you know what? All the gringo ladies I know who've had dogs have not been hassled or accosted by bad guys. Stay tuned for more on that next time.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.